Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This podcast contains discussions of child abuse, sexual repression and sexual abuse, suicide, racism, misogyny, PTSD and PTSD symptoms, and spiritual oppression and abuse, including guilt, shame, and fear. In most episodes, we will be mentioning some of these concepts in a general way without any graphic detail. If any of these topics or other triggering topics will be mentioned in great detail, we will let you know at the beginning of each individual episode, as well as in the show notes for that episode.
Welcome back to the Leaving Eden podcast. All right, we are your hosts. My name is Gabrielle Ha-Cohen. Who am I here with today?
It is I, Sadie Carpenter.
It is you.
And when I was in a terrible state, mental health-wise, I was given a grossly unhelpful book by a convicted felon.
Man, that seems like a very strange decision. Like, I don't understand why somebody would do that.
Well, I don't understand it either. So today we are going to talk to somebody who is far more qualified than either of us to see if we can come up with any logic or sense to why this book would have been given to me.
Yeah, so what we've done, we're talking about a book by a guy named Jack Skop. You may have heard of him. He recently got out of prison for sex trafficking of a minor, and he deemed himself to be a bit of a guru, right? That's about right, you know, like of being a...
Yes. So we talked, we did an entire episode about Christian counseling and what that is, and specifically what that is in the IFB. Jack Skop considered himself to be one of the foremost Christian counselors in the world, and he thought he was so good at it that he wrote a book specifically geared towards helping people with childhood trauma.
Out of curiosity, how does one sort of get to become renowned as a great Christian counselor? Is it just a thing where if you get to a certain level as a pastor, you can just say, I'm a great counselor, and everyone has to believe you?
I think what it is was he pastored one of the largest IFB churches. So if someone in the church had a problem, they would go talk to a lower level pastor first. They might see an assistant pastor, or if they were a teen, they might see a youth pastor, or if they were a child, they might see a children's pastor, or the principal of their Christian school, or they might go to their Sunday school teacher. Well, if that person felt like their problem was too big to solve, they would refer them up that chain of command until eventually the people with what were perceived as the worst problems, the biggest issues, ended up getting a personal counseling session with Jack Skop. So I think he felt that he could claim expertise because he had kind of seen the worst, quote unquote, worst problems that his church had.
You know, I'm wondering, because now that Jack Skop's out of prison, do you think he got mad that Club Penguin got shut down? And now he's got to get a TikTok.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Let me talk to these youths.
Oh, no. I hope he does get a TikTok so he can see all my videos about what exactly I think of him. But on the other hand, I hope he does not get a TikTok.
No, I think that if you're on the sex offender registry, you should be banned from getting a TikTok. That's just my opinion.
That's fine with me.
Anyway, we're talking about this book that he wrote today, Healing for the Inner Hurt. It is a weird book.
But fortunately, we have real professional help to help us analyze it.
Yeah, so we have an actual licensed psychologist, Dr. Shoshana Fagan here. She is licensed in the state of Massachusetts, I do believe. And she's going to be going through this book with us. It's going to be, I don't know if enlightening is the, actually, I would say enlightening is the right word, because she has some very interesting insights about what this book tells us about a guy like Jack Skop.
Yeah, I think we learn more about the author than anything else in this episode, and it's fascinating. So we're just about to play that interview for you. Before we do that, I want to give a general TW for this episode. We are going to be talking about mental health issues like depression and anxiety. We're going to talk about self-harm, eating disorders, suicidal ideation. We're not dwelling on any of those particularly heavily, and we like to omit details of that when we can. So if I talk about a time in my past when I had suicidal ideation, I'm not going to tell you specifically what my plans were, and I'm going to try to avoid using language that would trigger people who have been in a similar situation. But we are going to talk about all of those things in general throughout this episode.
Yeah. But before we get into that, I just need to say that the Leaving Eden podcast is a podcast about my BFF and co-host Sadie Carpenter's life in and escape from the Independent Fundamental Baptist cult. We talk about this cult. We talk about other cults. We talk about religion. We talk about fundamentalism. We talk about the real and present threat that cults and cult ideologies pose to society as a whole. And it is our goal to promote freedom of mind, freedom of thought, and freedom of religion. So if you like our show, if you are a fan of our show, one thing that you can do is you can join our Patreon, which is patreon.com/leavingedenpodcast, and you will get access there to extended and uncensored versions of most of our episodes, as well as some of Sadie's writings, which are very interesting. You can read what Sadie, an actual fundamentalism and cult survivor, thinks of The Handmaid's Tale. Great read if you're interested in that. You can also join our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/EdenExodus. You can join our subreddit, which is reddit.com/r/EdenExodus. Make sure that you tune in for our upcoming June content. June is, of course, Pride Month. I know that we've been previewing this a lot, but Sadie, I think we can announce now, right? Can we announce now?
Yeah, let's go ahead. I'm tired of waiting, and I'm extremely excited about the first guest that we have on for Pride Month.
Yeah, so next week we have an episode where we're going to talk about the history of Pride. It's really interesting, and like what to do if you've never been to Pride before and, you know, you're coming out of fundamentalism and you think you might want to go. That's really fun. The episode after that, we have an interview with, I think, a very cool person. I would say this person is very cool.
This person is somebody that I followed on TikTok, and I thought there's no way that I could get her on my podcast. And then I got her on my podcast. We're going to be talking to Elizabeth Hunter. She is at That Liz Hunter on social media. Amazing cult survivor story and about to be a published author. We had an amazing conversation. We're so excited to share it with you.
You forgot fashion icon, okay?
And fashion icon.
No, she's very cool. We already recorded that interview. It was a lot of fun. It was a great conversation. Highly recommend you guys subscribe, stay subscribed, and check that out. It was really enlightening. It was a great conversation. I loved talking to her. Oh, we've also got new merchandise available, including Pride Month merchandise. We have a new merch supplier, so it's not the same link as last time. Check the link in our show notes, and it'll be up on our Instagram, I think, by the time this episode is released, so you can check out the selections that are available. But for anything that is Pride merch, Sadie, we are donating the proceeds of that. We are donating the profits that we make off of any Pride merch. Where are we donating it to? Do you want to tell everybody?
Yeah. So our Pride Month donations this year are going to Point of Pride. Point of Pride is a foundation that provides direct assistance to trans and non-binary people. I picked this charity because I feel like they do a great mix of direct donation and advocacy, and they do a great mix of smaller one-time grants and big grants for specific people. So they have a grant that is annual for people who are seeking gender-affirming surgeries. They provide multiple grants per year to help trans femme people access electrolysis. And they also have a general fund to help many people access HRT through a service that's able to prescribe in states where that is difficult to gain access. They also distribute free binders and shapewear to trans and non-binary people all over the country.
That is a great cause.
Yeah, I love them because they mix huge things and smaller things and try to help as many people as possible in that way.
They are based, I believe, in Oregon, but they operate nationwide, including states like Texas and Florida. And we think that it's very important these days to pick a cause that is operating in states like Texas and Florida.
Yeah. And helping people present as themselves is obviously a huge thing for people's mental health and people's happiness. And that's important. But in the climate politically that we live in, it also can keep people safe and literally save their lives. So this is something that I'm really passionate about, and I'm happy to be supporting them.
Yes, 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 yes. And I think that's the last thing that we have to talk about before I get to thank our Faith Promise Missions tier patrons. All right. Thank you, thank you, thank you to all of our patrons, but especially to our Faith Promise Missions tier patrons. You guys really are the ones that keep the lights on. But your names are Alex, Todd, Brittany, it's Brittany, bitch, Carrie R., Crystal Patterson, Eleanor Donahue, Emery Fairlosser, the OG Emery Fairlosser. Thank you so much. We have Hannah, Hope Norum, Jen Kacharski, Jessica Tambeau, Kater Wee, Catherine Schneider, Kathleen Moncrief, Kristen Marie, Linda Morgan, Lorena Watson, Michaela, oh, thank you, Michaela, Madeline Cusick, Mary Martin, aka the actress that played Peter Pan on Broadway. We just like shouting that out. Megan Arndt, Rachel Bernadowitz, the name that Sadie can't pronounce. It's true. Rebecca Hoyt, Robert Stutz. Thank you so much. Sadie's actual BFF, Morgan. Thank you, Morgan. Sarah Reese, Shane Horton, Taylor, and as always, Wes the Cowboy. Thank you so much, Faith Promise Missions, to your patrons.
Yeah, thank you so much to all of our patrons, especially to the Faith Promise Missions tier patrons. We really appreciate you. All right, can we play this interview now? Because I am excited.
Yeah, let's go do it. So we are here. Sadie, do you want to introduce our guest today?
So today we have with us Shoshana. She is a licensed mental health professional, and we are going to be going through the Jack Skop mental health book, Healing for the Inner Hurts. This is going to be a ride. Welcome, Shoshana.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
We're so excited to have you and to dig into this document.
So, Shoshana, would you like to tell us about your professional background, your academic qualifications, so that they know that you are the real deal? And when we say that Jack Skop is a madman for writing this book, our listeners will know that we're not talking out of our asses.
Absolutely. My official title is Dr. Shoshana Fagan. I am a licensed clinical psychologist in the state of Massachusetts. I received my doctoral degree from Antioch University, New England. I also have a master's in science from Antioch University, New England, and a master's in arts psychology from Teachers College at Columbia University.
Oh, wow. So you are extremely qualified.
A little overeducated for anyone's well-being.
Did you ever think that you would be using that list of qualifications to dissect a Baptist mental health, quote-unquote, help book?
No, definitely not.
Sadie, do you want to give us maybe some background on this book, on your experience with this book, on what is this thing that we are reviewing today?
This thing. So I feel like most of our listeners will have heard me reference this book before. The title of the book is Healing for the Inner Hurts, and it is, of course, by Jack Skop. Jack Skop was the pastor of First Baptist Church of Hammond, Indiana from 2001 until 2012. In 2012, he was arrested and sent to prison for sex trafficking a minor. He had sexually abused this minor under pretenses of pastoral counseling. But before he went to prison for this, he was known as being a professional Christian counselor, just about the best of the best. And if you had a case that was too difficult to be dealt with by other Christian counselors employed by the church or the college, you would get sent all the way up the ladder to Jack Skop. Between the time we planned this episode and the release of this episode, Jack Skop has been released from prison about 10 months early. So we are going to be extra mean to him to deal with our anger over that.
Oh, is it all coming out today?
That shouldn't be that hard. There are an awful lot of quotes in this book that make him look, I don't know what the right word is, but...
psychotic.
Despicable.
And just like things that you could just thrust back in his face for doing exactly the opposite of what he says.
Oh, absolutely.
When, not if, when we are able to protest some event that he is attending or speaking at, I have a feeling there will be a lot of these quotes on poster board staring him in the face. Mm-hmm. So my history with this book, I've spoken about this in a lot of detail on the show. I was a student at Hiles Anderson College for 2 years. And during my second year there, I encountered some pretty major mental health problems. I was really depressed. I was feeling suicidal. I had immense amounts of stress in my life, as you would know if you just listened to the episode that came out last week, which is the Day in the Life of a College Student episode. I had so much going on, and it really started to affect my mental health. I was not yet diagnosed with PTSD, but I later would be. And in the depths of my struggles with this, I sought counseling from a college staff member who was supposed to be really knowledgeable on Christian counseling. And what I was given was this book, Healing for the Inner Hurts. Just to make it clear, by this point, by the point that I was handed this book, the author was already in prison.
Whoa, wait, you never mentioned that part.
Yes. So he surrendered himself for arrest, I believe, in October of 2012. And his trial was, I think, October 2012. And then I would have been given this book sometime after Christmas break. So early 2013.
So this is probably supposed to be Gabi's question, but I have to know, how did it make you feel being handed a book by written by a guy who had already gone to prison?
The explanation that I was given, which I did believe at the time, I did buy into at the time, was that Jack Skop was used by God to help and counsel a lot of people. And yes, he went to prison for something he did wrong, but that doesn't mean that his advice wasn't good.
So it's basically don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yes. If the baby is a pedophile and the bathwater is all of his crimes.
Yeah.
That's gonna say poison. Ooh.
That's much better. That's alliterated. That's great. I love it.
Let's get right into this book. The first thing I want to talk about with this book has got to be just the cover of it. Like, not even getting into like the actual content of the book. Just what is going on here? Have you seen this cover? Shoshana, did you yes. take a look at the cover of this book?
Gavi, can you paint a word picture for the listeners, because they can't see it until it goes up on our Instagram?
Sure. Okay. So this picture will be up on our Instagram. So if you go to our Instagram, then it's there. It says the cover is black. It says "Healing for the Inner Hurts" by Dr. Jack Skoff. I'm putting "Doctor" in the biggest air quotes. Doctor, just like Kent Hovind.
His doctorate is from Hiles Anderson, as far as I'm aware. Just
yeah. So
FYI.
It's not real.
Yes, so it is fake, unlike Shoshana's doctor, which is real.
Actual doctor. So what we have here is we have some pictures of like a collage of people who seem to be going through something. There looks like a couple here who might be going through a rough patch in their marriage. There is a person here whose hands are like around their face like they've been crying. There's a nice looking young woman staring at a picture with like a coffin behind her. I assume that she has lost a loved one. But more interesting than that, there is a picture, like, you know those like art posable figurines that you use in like art class to like draw like the shape of like a person?
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. There's one of those hanging from a noose from like a ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so like it's like they can't show like a person having hanged themselves. So they have like an art figurine that has hanged itself.
This kind of looks like Depressed Girl Tumblr from 2008.
Yes.
I'm not going to lie.
Yes. And then at the bottom, in the bottom left corner, there is a picture of, I guess, a goth person, a goth woman, a young woman in like goth aesthetic. So she has a spiked collar and extremely thin eyebrows. Now, Sadie, are you looking at this picture right now? I can't tell if this is
looking at this picture as we speak. Yes.
Is this a mannequin? Did he take a picture of a mannequin and put it on the cover of the book?
I think this is a photoshopped real person. Shoshana, what do you think about the goth girl on the cover?
I think it's a real person. Yeah.
You think it's a real person? I honestly think it's a mannequin. We'll throw it up on Instagram. You know what we'll do? We'll do a poll for our listeners. So
we can do a poll, and it is a confusing, this image is a confusing image.
Yeah, so the cover of this book is basically just like, this is a collage of everything that you will read inside this book is somehow related to something on this cover. This is the list of mental health struggles that a person can go through.
So also, just a quick side note, I literally just realized this, not in episode prep, but I am counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 human faces on the cover of this book. Do you want to take a quick look at those 6 faces and tell me if you notice anything?
I think, is it that only one of these faces is a man?
So that's one of it. Yes, that's one of the 2 things. So yeah, there are 1, 2, 3, yeah, 6 human faces on the cover of this book. 5 of them are women and all of them are white, which is interesting.
I mean, that doesn't surprise me based on
it. It doesn't surprise me. I just zero, not even performative diversity.
No.
Being portrayed.
Not even like a textbook, like your math textbook in 2000.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, so Shoshana, I want to get your opinion on this cover. Like, did the cover of this book adequately prepare you for the madness that you would find within?
I would say no, it definitely did not adequately prepare me for the madness that was within.
And that's saying a lot.
I would also probably maybe give this one of the few times I'm going to give a pass to the creators of this book, because it's really hard to put together the cover of any book on mental health or mental health struggles. Nothing really adequately captures it. The vast majority of the time, you just see the like a sad person's face on the cover. And I'd say 1, 2, 3, 4 out of the 6 pictures here feel kind of appropriate. I don't know what's the deal with the hanging mannequin. That's just creepy. And like the goth girl, like that just feels judgy.
Well, these are the IFB. They're very judgy. You right. know, that's kind of their shtick.
True.
I just feel that whoever picked the cover images for this book is saying, if someone looks like this with heavy, what's considered heavy makeup by IFB standards and a spiked collar, then they are therefore depressed and have mental health struggles.
Right. That's.
I think that's the very clear. That's the message here.
Absolutely.
I see people dressed crazier than that, you know, just walking to the grocery store.
You see people dressed crazier than that most times that you see me.
That's, I mean, this lady's hair isn't aquamarine.
It's not. It's a natural color.
Yeah.
And for someone who's wearing, honestly, someone who's wearing a spiked color like that, they've done their eye makeup quite well. Usually they would be a little more creative, I think.
You know, the one thing that really like just shows the age of this book is the extreme thin eyebrows.
You're right.
Yeah, like that. I heard that thin eyebrows are coming back, and I just want to warn Gen Z absolutely like that they gotta don't do it. Like, you're not going to be happy.
Okay, so now that we've talked about eyebrows, we should probably jump into the actual subject matter of this book.
Before we get into chapter one, though, I want to read the dedication.
Oh, okay.
Is that okay?
Let's do it.
So this is the dedication. The dedication says, "Dedicated to the army of silent sufferers who masquerade as normal, functioning adults while nursing inner wounds inflicted upon them from their days of youth. You had your innocence stolen, your trust betrayed, and your love tainted by fear and pain." Keep in mind, this was written by a man who would later go to prison because he told a teenage girl under the guise of counseling her that it was God's will that they should have sex, and then transported her across state lines and sexually abused her.
That is correct. That is what he went to prison for.
And that's what he wrote as the dedication to, of this book.
Yeah. I find that. So I do have a note for myself on the dedication. I wrote, is that a dig or an apology? So part of me was wondering if he was attempting to apologize for transgressions he maybe had engaged in and felt guilty about, but others didn't know. In fact, to be perfectly honest, there were a lot of places in this book where I sort of wondered if he was talking about himself and trying to convince himself of certain things rather than it's supposed to be about someone else. Yes.
That is a fascinating insight that I had not thought of. But that changes everything.
I definitely see that. We don't have anybody else who has come forward by name and said that they were a victim, a underage victim of Jack Skop. We do have other credible abuse allegations from adults. But I would be very surprised to learn that the victim that he was caught abusing in 2012 was his only victim. I would be shocked.
The other thing that I want to take away from this is that he seems to be under the impression that the only people who are suffering, the only people who he addresses as suffering are people who had wounds inflicted upon them from their days of youth. So basically, he's saying the only reason why you would have mental health struggles is if somebody had done something to you.
And that's a common theme throughout the book. It's you are having mental health problems now because of something that happened to you when you were a child or a teenager.
Ergo, the way the book is written, there's sort of the second piece that makes a person feel, ergo, if you're having mental health problems, you must have had something bad happen to you as a child. which also will leave people feeling as though there was something terrible that happened to them as a child. And although I think, Sadie, you've done a fabulous job establishing that the IFB is a highly toxic environment, it doesn't mean that every individual home was abusive. And there could easily be people out there who struggled with mental health issues for a variety of other reasons, but then are given this book and are made to feel like something must have been much worse at home than they realized.
This happened to me. So even after leaving the IFB, like in my early first couple years of getting out, I went to a past life regression hypnotherapist to try to uncover the traumatic memories that must have given me these mental health problems. Like, I literally went under hypnosis to try to find my traumatic memories that Jack Skop said I must have.
And that's a terrible thing to have to happen. I'm so sorry you had to go through that.
Well, I appreciate that. And I'm happy that I've been able to move past that.
Absolutely.
And, you know, keep growing.
And generally, past life hypnotherapists are not well accepted in the mainstream mental health community.
Yeah, that is one of those things like chiropractors and essential oils and all this kind of thing. It's like, hey, if this is going to make you feel good and it is safe for you, because that can be different for every person.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. But this isn't the standard of care, and it's not the first thing that you should run to, probably.
Absolutely.
That's very much where I fall on kind of all of anything that's crunchy or hippy-dippy. It's like, hey, if this is going to make you feel good feelings and it is safe, well, okay. But...
I feel that way about acupuncture, actually, despite it actually having some empirically supported evidence in certain situations. I don't understand how it works. I can't believe it possibly could work, but it obviously seems to work. So go for it.
Mm-hmm. It's covered by insurance.
Exactly.
So, you know, why wouldn't you?
So where should we go to next? Is that all we have for the foreword to this book, or do we have another note on that?
So is it in chapter one or is it in the foreword where he talks about why he wrote the book?
I think that is in the foreword. I'm looking at it. It's on page 10 of the book.
Because what he says here essentially is that he decided to write this book because in 2005, Terri Schiavo was allowed to die.
Oh, I have a lot from the foreword.
Okay. Yeah, because basically he's saying, and you guys remember like a few months ago, we did an episode about David Gibbs and the CLA and their involvement with the Terri Schiavo case. So if you want an update on what happened there, you can go back and listen to that. But Jack Skop basically decided that the whole of medical professionals in the country, I guess, are not interested in preserving life and cannot be trusted to do so. Because Terri Schiavo died, and therefore it is up to him to write a book in which he would use the word of God to repair the mental health of those who were considering suicide. Because if Terri Schiavo had had counseling from someone like Jack Skop, she would not have suffered from bulimia and therefore would not have fallen into the coma and therefore would not have died. Yeah.
Okay. Which, that was a long walk for a short drink of water.
Yeah. But like you can see why, like if it getting inside, like this tells us so much about the mind of a Jack Skop.
He is saving the world from the medical system that allowed Terri Schiavo to have an eating disorder and therefore die.
Shoshana, what's your take on this?
I think that. I don't even know where to begin. As someone who's not a medical doctor, I'm not sure I have the credentials to speak directly to Terri Schiavo's medical condition. I can guarantee that her underlying heart condition, which caused the heart attack that led to her persistent vegetative state, would not have been fixed through Christian counseling.
I definitely agree with your assessment on that.
And I'm going out on a limb here because, again, I'm not a medical doctor. So I, you know, don't want to say things that I'm not qualified to say.
You know, I do feel, I feel like that is a really solid assessment, though.
Yeah. Thank you.
Just like as a layperson's opinion, I could have said the same thing, but I feel better if it's coming from you.
Okay. You know? Again, we have the same credentials when it comes to heart conditions.
Yeah.
Wait, but your father's, what kind of doctor is your father?
PCP.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, not anymore. He retired like 2 years ago. So I don't think he's board certified anymore. Mm-hmm.
So Shoshana, what else did you have for us on the foreword to this book?
Yeah. So on pages 14 and 15, there is mention of a number of areas around mental illness. And on page 14, there's a short story around addiction. And talking about, I guess, let me rephrase that. So there's a question he poses to his audience about whether it being worth people bringing into the ministry, individuals who may be talking to themselves and answering themselves. And then towards the end of the same paragraph, he talks about addictions holding these people captive. Well, unfortunately for Jack, individuals who are talking to themselves and answering themselves, they may be suffering from addictions, but those particular symptoms are not indicative of addiction. And so on this page, he misidentifies someone who probably has a major mental illness as suffering from addiction. Whereas on the following page, he goes into a discussion on... Where is the text that he refers to?
It is Mark chapter 5.
Oh, so I Googled the actual chapter and I read the passage. And after reading through the passage, which says, no man can bind him. And then later on, it says, neither could any man tame him. And always night and day, he was in the mountains and in the tombs, crying and cutting himself with stone. Jack then goes and identifies this person as having dissociative identity disorder. There is absolutely nothing about this description that would indicate dissociative identity disorder. My first guess after reading this particular passage would actually be that this person might have ingested something that was causing hallucinations. So first, he's calling someone with major mental illness, someone who's engaging in activity with illegal substances. And then literally in the next paragraph, he's saying someone has a major mental illness. But the major descriptor that he skips over shows that there's just as much likelihood that this person actually is suffering from the effects of a addictive substance.
So he's just mixed up those two.
Completely.
For the former church kids following along in the audience, we call that the story of the maniac of Gadara is the story in Mark chapter 5.
Yeah.
You know what I see the connection here as being? That basically, you know, if you look at like people who are homeless, you see people who are suffering from, I don't know, maybe schizophrenia or some other disorder like that, and they've just, you know, and the system has really, you know, failed them and let them fall through the cracks, and they've ended up homeless. And then you also have people who are homeless who use drugs, and that's a contributing factor there. And
absolutely.
Basically, it's just like if somebody is homeless, they are one of these people. Therefore, these two people are the same people.
He's conflating them in the same way most lay people do, making assumptions about who homeless people are. The unfortunate reality is statistics show that up to 50% of homeless people in a city are mentally ill. And there's absolutely a large group of homeless people and just a large group of people who are mentally ill that self-medicate through substance use. But there's nothing that would make a person who knows about mental illness or about substance use jump to the conclusion of substances when they see a person talking to themselves or, in the clinical terminology, responding to internal stimuli.
I want to circle back to him bringing up dissociative identity disorder in particular, because I honestly, and I want Shoshana's take on this, but I honestly feel like Jack Skop Googled DID one time and then decided to apply that diagnosis to a biblical character. The quote from the book is, if modern psychologists had been diagnosing people in Bible times, no doubt they would have labeled this man as having dissociative identity disorder, formerly known as multiple personality disorder. And that no doubt just sticks. No doubt they would have labeled this man. That just sticks in my mind because I do not feel like this, the description of the maniac of Gadara, is a good fit for the DSM definition of dissociative identity disorder.
Yeah. And if I had a student write a paper using this character as an example of dissociative identity disorder, I would fail them.
I would expect you to. Like, I have a very close friend who has been diagnosed with DID. So I've done a little bit of just layperson research into the condition from things that they have sent me, and just to kind of have a little bit of a handle on what they're going through and how I can support them. And I don't think that this biblical character's presentation has anything to do with DID. And I honestly feel like Jack Scott just Googled it.
Absolutely.
I think a lot of people have been reading a lot about DID lately just because of Moon Knight.
It's also a thing on TikTok.
Is it? Mm-hmm. Okay. Maybe that's why. Huh.
Don't get your mental health advice from TikTok or social media.
Right. Hashtag don't get your mental health advice from TikTok, right?
Or yeah. A podcast.
Yes.
If we
Oh, disclaimer, please don't use the information I share on this podcast as formal mental health advice.
No, if we can encourage you and make you feel better and make you feel heard and understood and encourage you to seek professional help if you need it, that's great. But please do not get your professional formal help from this podcast, even when we have exceptionally qualified people as guests.
Yeah. And so back to this question about the diagnosis. Yeah, there's nothing about this character, you're right, unless I'm missing something about this story. And again, I did a quick Google search on the story, to be fair, which again, we're accusing him of doing a quick Google search on the diagnosis. So I don't want to be overly judgy in that respect. But based on my short understanding of the story, there's nothing that would indicate dissociative identity disorder. The diagnostic criteria list the presence of two or more distinct identities or personality states, each with its own relatively enduring pattern of perceiving, relating to, and thinking of the environment and self. They recurrently take control of the person's behavior. A person has an inability to recall important personal information that is too extensive to be explained by ordinary forgetfulness. And the disturbance is not due to physiological effects of a substance or general medical condition. And there's nothing described in this character to make a person think that they have two distinct personality states.
I wonder how Jack Scott got to DID. I don't understand how any reasonable person would make that connection.
I have no clue. I truly have no clue.
Maybe he got it confused with something else. I don't know. Or maybe he heard somebody talking about it. Or maybe he didn't even Google it. He just went outside his office when he was writing and he's like, hey, Marcia, do you know what it's called when somebody says a bunch of stuff to themselves? What's the name of that one?
Right.
And then, yeah.
I mean,
that sounds so accurate, though.
So here would be my guess. People are constantly confusing schizophrenia with multiple personality disorder. DID is the updated term for multiple personality disorder. So I'm guessing that he made the common mistake that everyone makes and assumes that people who talk to themselves have multiple personalities, and he was trying to sound official and put in the DID information.
I think that's a very good theory. Are we ready to move on to chapter one of this book?
Yes, let's do that, because chapter one is like, I mean, you guys thought it was crazy already.
Yeah, I don't.
It's about to go off the rails here. I don't know.
I have notes on notes here.
So chapter one primarily deals with self-harm. So I do want to give a CW. That's going to be the topic of this chapter. And we're going to try to avoid anything that's just gratuitously graphic. But this chapter does go into a lot of detail and talks about methods that people use to self-harm. It paints very vivid word pictures of a person who is self-harming. And I was self-harming when I was given this book. And so was...
Oh, no.
Yeah, and so was a friend of mine to a much more severe extent than I was. And I wanted to just get Shoshana's kind of off-the-cuff take on that, because I felt like this book just... It was triggering, but I don't know if triggering is even the correct word to describe it. I feel like giving a person who is struggling with self-harm this book is like putting a pint glass full of vodka in front of an alcoholic.
I honestly think that's a fabulous analogy. This particular chapter does nothing to help a person who's self-harming recover, gain a sense of control, even feel like a sense of normalization in a healthy way. On top of the fact that, again, he continues to conflate different diagnoses. And so he's throwing all these other diagnoses in with self-harm and calling them self-harm, though technically you could consider them self-harm. That's not how we conceptualize them from a mental health perspective, because usually the etiology and the development of these disorders come from very different places. And then, as I had mentioned earlier, it makes everyone feel like they must have been abused if they're self-harming.
He's specifically conflating eating disorders of all kinds, and he names several different eating disorder diagnoses and conflates that with self-harm.
Absolutely. And both types of diagnoses often present with people who are really struggling with their self-image and self-worth, but he makes these sweeping statements about how all people who self-harm are X, or all people who have eating disorders do it because of Y. And that is just not how things work in life.
So you're saying that the fundies like to paint with a broad brush?
And only use one color.
That is shocking. That is a shocking revelation.
I know. It's so surprising. So yeah. Going back to my own experience with this book, if you happen to have a copy, if you're looking at this book, it's on the bottom of page 17, top of page 18. There is a whole list, and it starts with the word self-injury includes. And I'm not going to read it because I don't want to accidentally trigger somebody, but there's a whole list of like 15 different forms of self-harm. And I took this book. So when I was given this book by the Christian counselor at the college, I took the book back to the counselor and I put this list in front of him. I believe I actually copied the list from this book onto a separate sheet of paper, if I'm remembering correctly. And I put either the book or the paper that I had copied it down on, whichever way it was, I slammed it on the desk in front of this Christian counselor and I said, "Do you see this list of things? I have done all but three of them. Can you help me?"
Jesus.
His response was, "You need to read your Bible and pray more." And I was wondering if Shoshana could maybe just rant about how fucking irresponsible that is, because it would make me feel better.
Absolutely. First, though, I want to normalize this a little bit for people who are listening, because a larger percent of people engage in non-suicidal self-injury than I think others realize. Current statistics show that 15% of college students, 17% of adolescents are engaging in non-suicidal self-injury. Individuals who are LGBTQ+ are at increased risk of engaging in these behaviors. And so a large percentage of people out there are doing this. And they do it for a variety of reasons, including, you know, poor self-esteem, release of pain, because they hear others are doing it to relieve stress. And so characterizing it as all happening for one reason is never going to be helpful. That being said, when someone comes to you and says that they are harming themselves, and your response is go read something, go read anything, whether it be the Bible, whether it be the DSM, whether it be a phone book, that in and of itself is irresponsible. If someone is engaging in self-harm behavior, they need to see a professional who can help them get coping skills and tools that are going to help them be safer.
Was this person a mandatory reporter?
I don't know. I have not looked into it deeply enough to say for sure. This person did work for the college, but it's not an accredited college, so I'm not sure how that works. This person was the most trained person that the college had in mental health. I think he had like something from a community college or something.
And what's most scary to me is, if I'm going to give them the most benefit of the doubt possible, then they should have pointed you in the direction of something specific in the Bible that could be comforting and helping. Yes, there are people that find comfort in the Bible.
Yeah, I mean, I do. I still
do. Right. And there are passages within the Bible that can help ground a person. There are passages within the Bible that can help provide context and can help a person feel like their situation is more normalized. But just to say a sweeping, go read your Bible, is the equivalent of saying, eat your fruits and vegetables and you will lose weight. Or eating your fruits and vegetables so you don't, so your diabetes goes away.
So what I ended up doing, because I feel like Shoshan is probably curious, what I ended up doing was I would write scripture verses on myself in ink over areas where I typically would have hurt myself. And that practice was fairly helpful until a few years later when I got professional help. I'm happy to tell you and our podcast listeners, I am, almost 4 years removed from any kind of self-harm. And before that, 4 years ago, I was like 2 or 3 years before I broke my streak and had to start over. So I am very much consider myself in recovery and doing great. And I'm very proud of myself. But it was years after this incident before I got any real professional help. And I'm thankful that I lived through it.
Absolutely. And I want to applaud you for coming up with such a healthy way of responding to that advice. That's a really healthy thing to do. And it's really consistent with a lot of people out there. There are a lot of people who will get tattoos over places where they've self-harmed.
Yeah, I know. I have a lot of friends who have gotten either tattoos in places that that's a temptation or in places that they have scars. And I think that's a really beautiful thing to do. But this advice was not helpful. And I feel like I survived this advice.
And it's because of you and your own resilience to be able to take that horrible information and come up with a more healthy and adaptive way of coping. Like, that's incredible.
I just struggle to understand how that could have seemed like a good idea. I mean, how giving me this book in the first place could have seemed like a good idea ever.
Yeah, that I don't get. But it also tells me that whoever this quote unquote professional was didn't have professional training. I mean, I work with three amazing people in our spiritual care department, and I guarantee you none of them would ever give that kind of advice.
It is a bit mind-blowing, the whole thing.
God, I'm so happy you made it through, Sadie, because that, like, that's, I feel like just saying go read your Bible more is worse than because I mean that's kind of what was causing a lot of the problems to begin with, was
this
focus.
This same counselor, a fellow college student, confessed to him that he had plans to actively harm me and kill me, and the same counselor did nothing about that. So I guess it's not really that surprising.
And so that's interesting, because many states have something called a Tarasoff law, and it would have been in effect when you were in college. Backstory, there was a woman whose last name was Tarasoff, whose name, I cannot remember her first name anymore. But essentially what happened was someone came to their counselor saying, I am going to kill this person, last name Tarasoff. At the time, the counselor couldn't, as part of confidentiality, disclose their imminent plans to harm someone. And this person, Tarasoff, was killed. And as a result, my understanding is all states have passed Tarasoff warnings and Tarasoff laws that allow mental health professionals to break confidentiality in the face of imminent harm to another. And by law, if someone comes to me and says, I plan on killing someone, I plan on harming someone, and I feel like the threat is imminent and clear, I absolutely have to do something.
Of course, in Sadie's case, it wasn't confidential because she was in the room when this guy said these things.
Well, yeah, I was in the room when he told the counselor that he was planning on harming me, but I am told that he also told the counselor the same thing when I was not in the room.
Either way, she would have had a legal responsibility to take steps to ensure your safety.
So, Gavi, there was another thing that is also insanely triggering that you wanted to talk about from chapter one. Would you like to bring that up?
So a trigger warning for all of the things.
Seriously, but especially sexual assault.
Yeah, this is I read this and I was just baffled. I was perplexed. I at the fact that this section was printed in a book and distributed to people, and nobody who read this section said we should not put this into print and publish this
anywhere ever.
It's horrible. So Jack Scott, he introduces the concept of self-harm. He says some statistics about people who do it and goes on to say that people who engage in self-harm were previously victims of physical, emotional, or sexual abuse, continuing a pattern that we've already introduced. He introduces problem eating disorders. Then he casually launches into a horrific account. This kid says that when he was 12, he was sent to a military academy and was gang raped by older boys. And then I want to read a quote from this section. And he says that this boy is coming to Jack Scop and saying this. He says, "I came to you today not because I'm necessarily angry at those boys any longer, but because I have become what I hated in them. I am a bona fide sodomite. Committing sodomy is as natural to me as breathing air. I have had multiple relationships with scores of men and boys. Mine has become a lifestyle, and I hate myself so much I cannot deal with me anymore." First of all, I want to say there is a 0% chance that this is a real story. Okay. I don't think I should just have to say that, but like this is clearly a fictional story, like a fictional anecdote that Jack Scott put into this book. But this probably non-existent young man goes on to confess committing acts of sexual violence on preteen boys and confesses to his real and present desire to continue to sexually abuse children. And what does Jack Scott do? I'm going to read the quote, and this is a sentence. This sentence directly follows a sentence where the young man confesses to what he does and what he plans to do in the future. And Jack Scop says, "We chatted for a little longer, and after our appointment was over, I wrote down a statement. Those who hurt us the most are often hurting the most."
That's his response.
That's his response. He's like, "Man, this kid came in and said all these things to me. Man, hurt people, hurt people."
And just to clarify, the young man in this story is like 18, 19.
Yeah,
and coming to Jack Scott to talk about something that happened when he was 12.
Yeah, and like his behavior since then and like all of the horrible things that he's been doing since then. And Jack Scott's like, "Man, hurt people, hurt people."
I have two responses to this. First, I think this is one of the examples that made me think that he's talking about himself.
Really?
I don't have evidence of it at all. I just have a vibe that he's disclosing his own history of victimization.
That seems...
Maybe not the specifics, but like...
Yeah, I don't know of him ever being sent to military school, but I feel like there's a very good chance that he would have attended, I don't know, say Christian church camp or other that sort of situation. And then kind of created a fictionalized account of what saying this young man did abuse children, whether or not Jack Scott actually did. Maybe it was something that had entered his mind or that he had become obsessed with. I mean, I could see it.
Because later, like a few sentences later, he says, "You will discover one profound fact. People who are doing all the hurting are some of the people who are hurting the most." I think he's talking about himself. Again, wow. No true evidence, but I think that whole story is an allegory. I don't think he had any person that he knew that was close to it. And frankly, I don't even know if he necessarily cared so much about, like, he wanted to paint a picture of what was in his mind the worst possible situation, not necessarily his own. Maybe it was his own. Maybe it was what I don't want to put conjecture here. But to me, he's doing two things. He's emphasizing, he's creating a scenario where he's just sort of going out and trying to say, or using this as an opportunity to say, being gay is bad. And then he's also, which is what's even worse, I feel like he's equating consensual sex with rape, because as it goes down, this guy is disclosing that he engages in consensual relationships. And then he's talking about it right after he has this like horrible disclosure about having been horribly, horribly assaulted. And the way the story reads, the two are equivalent, which is just terrifying to me.
Well, he's confessing to two things. He's confessing to, I have consensual relationships with other adult men, and I non-consensually abuse children.
And I was non-consensually abused.
And those are all the same level of quote-unquote crime in the way that Jack Scott is writing about them.
And texts like this, I think, are the reason why people like the Duggars can't differentiate between, I can never pronounce this like acronym, CSAM and consensual pornography.
This is, I mean, that's exactly it, because in Duggar world, the crime that Josh Duggar committed and will hopefully get sentenced to a very long time for, we're recording this before the sentencing, is the same as cheating on his wife.
Or a consensual male-male relationship.
Yes, exactly.
Sadie, you've read the documents, all of Jack Scott's pleas for leniency when he wrote to the judge and asked, please go easy on me, and also please let me out of jail early. Was there anything in there where he talked about his background and how he had at one time been the victim of some sort of violence or some sort of abuse?
No, he doesn't bring it up in there. Nothing that I'm remembering.
Still a very valid theory, though. If that was in there, then I would have said, like, there is 100% chance, at least from my opinion.
Well, another thing is that Jack Scott is kind of equating all abuse to be the same.
Absolutely.
So being physically abused or being mentally abused or being sexually abused is all kind of the same thing, the same psychological effect in his world.
Which we know not to be true. By far, sexual abuse has the absolute worst impact on children's development. And actually, what comes next in terms of impact on a person's development is usually psychological abuse / neglect. It's a lot harder on a child to sort of understand and negotiate that than they can physical abuse, because physical abuse is still attention.
Mm-hmm. So we've been talking about ways that Jack Scott told on himself. Would y'all like to get into some pull quotes from this book that include him telling on himself?
That sounds like a great idea.
Okay.
Yeah, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, why don't you start with your favorite one?
Okay, so I think the most sort of salient quote in the face of what Jack Scott was convicted of is the following. However, these and other extenuating circumstances never make victimizing another human being acceptable. Being victimized will never be a satisfactory reason for victimizing others.
Wow, that's extremely accurate.
Yes, Jack Scott, it is never acceptable to victimize another human being, Jack Scott.
No.
Thank you for letting us know.
Yeah, I'm glad that if somebody victimized another human being, I would hope that they wouldn't ask for, I don't know, leniency from a judge.
Because your parents are old.
Yeah.
This is the one that related. This is the quote. This is a little bit long, but I think it's worth it. Sorry, Gavi, I'm going to read this because I love it.
Go for it.
Don't be mad. Okay. Several times I have met with men who have lost their ministry, and all they want is to bemoan their loss and have back what they lost. The typical stance and statement I hear is, I don't understand why people won't forgive me. Where is the grace and forgiveness of Christians? What happened to their righteousness and good choices? Some of these men preached for years about reading the Bible and praying, but when they made the choice to dispense with these things, all they want is forgiveness. They want to have a big Band-Aid applied to the wound and to hear some soothing words like, we're so sorry for you, it surely did hurt to live in sin, didn't it? What happened to good choices when you freely and deliberately choose to make some incredibly stupid decisions that have robbed you of everything good in life, especially your reputation and your testimony? The result of your exodus into worldly living is to whine about how hard it was for you. What happened to good choices? End quote. I don't know, Jack Allen Skop, what happened to good choices? Why don't you tell me?
Jesus f-ing Christ, dude, that is on the nose.
Yeah, I have that one starred all over the place.
Jesus, can I do the next one?
You can do the next one. I am claiming what happened to good choices as my protest sign.
That is an excellent protest sign, Sadie. I really like that. God, that is so absolutely
on the nose.
What could
possibly be more about himself than that quote?
So one thing that I've found from this book is that it's also low-key like a marketing tool for Hiles Anderson College, because he'll be talking about something. He'll be talking about like a mental health subject, and then randomly he'll insert in there, Hiles Anderson College offers a variety of activities for young Christian people who are the future ministry workers. Like, you know, and he'll be like, the Beverly Lake in the middle of the beautiful 5-acre Hiles Anderson College campus. Like, you know, okay, like, he just keeps bringing up like rape and incest victims and like zero resolution.
And Hiles Anderson campus.
Yeah, and Hiles Anderson campus.
And see, that's just like, I think he's talking more about himself than he realizes.
Yeah, so he goes on to say, parents, if you have a kid who graduated high school and are 18, treat them more strictly or they will disobey you. Age ain't not but a number, and just because they're 18 doesn't make it okay for them to watch HBO movies and try liquor and fornicate, or their misdeeds will be visited on their family for 4 generations. That, like, what even it, like,
well, this goes back to a story that I've told about him before. When I was 16 at Ladies Spectacular, and he preached an entire sermon to a room full of teenage girls about the highly specific ways that our outfits were causing him and other good preacher boys to lust.
So I also want to point out, Jack Skop says in here that age ain't nothing but a number, which is the name of the Aaliyah album that was produced by R. Kelly. Yeah, so Jack Skop and R. Kelly both agree that age ain't nothing but a number.
Jack Skop and R. Kelly probably agree on a good deal.
Yeah, well, they've been imprisoned for similar crimes.
Shoshana, do you have another poll quote? What's your next best Skop poll quote?
So page 33 at the top, it says, just some pastoral advice. Watch your children. I have noticed they are pairing up with certain people with whom I would never trust my children.
Wow.
He said something like that about me once.
Ooh.
Yeah. Nice. Skop, and all of this was happening. He was more involved with our church around the time I was 16, which is scary to think about.
Ew.
Just incredibly scary. I have pictures of me and my family and another church family going out to eat with Jack Skop. And in the picture, you can see that he has scooted his chair down to be directly across from a gaggle of teenage girls, including me. I can tell you, he absolutely gravitated towards teenage girls above anybody else. Teenagers in general, but especially teenage girls. Which, looking back, is just makes my skin crawl. But when he was at my church for a conference when I was about 16, he went on this long rant from the pulpit. Apparently, my dad had said, in compliment to some man in the church, my dad had said, well, I trust my teenage daughter with him. If she needs a ride somewhere, I trust him to take her. And Jack Skop just latched on to, if my dad even said it, I don't know that he did. But Jack Skop just latched onto that and went on a whole rant about how I was this perfect, precious, pure thing. And if my dad would trust me with some man, then that was such a high compliment, and just kind of went on and on about it.
That is so creepy.
It is creepy considering, like, just looking back 2 years later, he sexually abused somebody who was the age that I was when he was saying those things about me.
Right.
Oh,
just scary. And I, like, how close did I come to disaster?
So I have two quotes right here. The first is on page 73, he talks about how technology brings moral challenges. Again, from I want to remind everybody of the manner in which Jack Skop was caught in the crime of molesting a minor teenager, is that he had pictures of said incident on his smartphone.
Yes, technology brings moral challenges, does it?
Yes, it does. Anyway, this is another one, though. So he says here, in my late 20s, and also trigger warning, because this is an insane quote. He says, in my late 20s, I went through some struggles of wondering about my life. Even a Christian can reach the bottom point in his life when he starts wondering whether or not life is worth living. Perhaps he starts fingering the trigger of a gun, wondering if maybe a bullet is the best way to end it all. That is an insane quote. But then he transitions immediately, like not like no break. He just like an immediate pivot to talking about basketball and talking about NBA players wearing warm-ups over their jerseys when they're waiting to get subbed into the game.
Which was a terrible analogy.
It doesn't
make any
sense.
That was a really dumb analogy. That was worse than some of Bill Gothard's analogies, and that's really saying something.
This book is
so I just to clarify that quote, Jack Skop did often talk about his own suicidal ideation.
Okay.
When he was in his late 20s. This is something that he brought up on occasion. And the story that I believe I always heard him tell was that he actually did put a weapon to his head. And then he realized that his young children would have to live through everything that entails. And he did not want that outcome for his children. And that's why he did not commit suicide at that time.
Which is often one of the things that stop people from following through on suicide. Can I give just a quick suicide kind of...
Yes, please. Warning.
Yes. So I do just want to say, like, you know, a lot of people do contemplate suicide, and the numbers have been going up since the pandemic started. If you're having thoughts of suicide, please reach out. Please help. Or please get help. There are so many ways to reach out and seek help anonymously. I've given Sadie and Gavi contact information that I'm hoping they can post. Either for the National Suicide Hotline, or if you are GLBTQ, the Trevor Project is an absolutely amazing organization, and it has ways to contact people via phone, via text, via messaging on a computer. Anytime you're having these thoughts or feelings, reaching out for support can make a huge difference.
Those will be, we will post them on the Instagram, but they will also be in the episode description for this episode, where they should be just clickable links. So it'll just be one click away. And I will tell you, I have called a hotline like that in the past, and I'm glad I did. And I got help, and stuff got better. And I'm happy that I'm here.
And we're really happy that you're here.
So I did find... amidst all of Jack Skop just telling on himself, I found one piece of advice in this book that I do think is pretty good advice. So it just in the interest of giving credit, on page 80 and 81, the book talks about panic attacks. It says that one source of panic attacks can be having too many loose ends, like starting a bunch of projects and not finishing them. If that's the kind of thing that gives you anxiety, try not to do that. Don't overdo on multitasking. I can confirm, like, unfinished projects and things that I have to do is a source of anxiety for me, and I'm sure it is for some other people as well. And I try to not do that, and I use to-do lists to motivate me to actually finish tasks. So that is advice that is good advice for at least some people.
Yeah, and actually, I found that whole chapter overall to be not so bad.
Like non-harmful.
Yeah.
If not super helpful or anything new or creative, that chapter is kind of like probably not going to hurt anybody.
Yeah. I would say the only thing that could potentially not be fabulous is the next part where they talk about a cluttered life, only because it's not taking into consideration people for whom organization is really difficult. Those people out there who have ADHD or are neurodiverse in other areas, organization cleanliness is really difficult and can take a long time to achieve. I myself have an ADHD diagnosis, and I have worked my whole life to figure out how to keep my home clean. I still cannot do it. I've learned how to clean up after myself. I've learned how to compensate for myself. But if someone told me that my cluttered home was the cause of my anxiety, it would just make me feel worse. Because it's not something that I could control so easily. It's something that I've had to work incredibly hard at. Yeah. And so I do want to point out that's probably the one place in this section about anxiety where, yeah, clutter is harder to live around, but not everyone can avoid it so easily.
That is something I identify with so strongly. As also a person with an ADHD diagnosis, oh man, if somebody told me, well, your life sucks because your room is messy, I would,
Yeah, it makes you feel horrible about yourself.
Oh yeah.
I also feel like so as somebody who has an anxiety disorder, his description of panic attacks as being very, potentially very debilitating and very difficult is one of the more compassionate moments in this book. But his description of anxiety in general is real weak. With like the level of anxiety that I have and the amount that it impedes my ability to function if it's not managed, he really underestimates how bad anxiety can be, even though he's surprisingly compassionate about how bad panic attacks can be.
And again, I think this goes back to he's writing about himself. Again, my hypothesis based on not having met the guy, so I can't diagnose him.
Lucky you.
Yeah, I'm going to appreciate that one. He has some really salient descriptions about certain aspects of anxiety that feel like they're coming from a place of personal knowledge. But he's only about writing about what he knows, not writing about what other people experience.
So having met him and spent not insignificant time with him, that rings true for me. I think it's a good guess. I would not at all be surprised if he was a person who did have panic attacks, just from, like, I've seen his physical behavior when he's under stress. I've seen him pace a lot. I've seen him fidget and kind of start to hyperventilate and catch himself or cover for himself. Like I've seen physical evidence of anxiety and panic attacks just from like what I can visually see. So that really, I think that's an excellent guess.
Do you think that Jack Scoff seems like the type of person who would throw a Monopoly board against the wall because his wife is beating him at Monopoly? Because that's another story that he tells in this book.
No, I think he's the kind of guy who would try to get into her head and like he thinks he is so much smarter than everyone else and he thinks he is an expert at psychology. And I think that he would try to get in her head and make her feel bad and psychologically manipulate her into losing on purpose. Just my opinion. Have not played Monopoly with him.
You would know better than I would. It seems like there's like a formula here where like every time he talks about it, he'll like introduce an overarching problem and then he will tell a disturbing and highly triggering anecdote with zero resolution at the end of it.
And zero ringing of reality.
Yeah. And just like the craziest you have ever heard. Then he will use this to introduce you to a concept. He will relate that concept to some Bible verses and then compare this concept to an extreme world event or bad actor or something, and then finish off by saying, at Hiles Anderson College, life is perfect.
That's because this book is written primarily for teenagers and youth pastors, because in Jack Scott's world, teenagers and women are the only people who have mental health problems.
Yeah, just in like my browsing of this book, Like the things he's compared this stuff to, let's see, there's Terry Schiavo, the Holocaust, Saddam Hussein, Native American genocide, the Columbine school shooting, Jimi Hendrix, NBA basketball players in tracksuits, HBO movies, and the Taliban. Like that's
quite a list.
That is.
I feel like that's like a late night show. Like you read that list and then the guy rips open the envelope and then gives you the joke.
Or it's like Steve Harvey's up there on Family Feud is like, what are give me 8 things that Jack Scott, show me Terry Schiavo. Ding, 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 ding.
This book, y'all, we could have done twice the amount of content that we have done on it easily. I have one really short quote that I want to read, and then I have a final question for Shoshana. I just want to support my claim that the answer to everything I was going through at the time I was given this book was to read the Bible and pray more. This is a quote from page 96. Many people come to my office for counseling and say, Pastor, I have been diagnosed by my doctor or psychologist as having panic attacks, or with adult attention deficit disorder, or as bipolar. I ask the person, how is your quiet time with the Lord? Or how is your walk with God? Or what is your meditation time like? They are generally embarrassed as they admit it is non-existent. So that quote is just support for my claim that the answer to literally any mental health problem or conundrum or issue is read your Bible and pray.
It's also literally what happened to you.
Yeah. Yes, it is also very much my lived experience. But I like to back up when people put my lived experience on paper. I like to share that.
That is infuriating. I'm angry.
Well, it makes me feel because the IFB is such a gaslighty place that I was never encouraged to trust my own memory or intuition or experience or feelings. And that's the experience. That's what happened to a lot of us who were raised like that. And that's one thing our podcast does is we validate people. We say, yes, you did probably experience this because I did too.
Right.
Or yes, if you felt this way, I felt that way too. So sometimes I have to kind of do that for myself. I have to validate my own experience, and it helps when I can find it on paper.
I was going to say, who knew you'd get validation of your life experience from these particular pages?
So my kind of final question, because unfortunately we're out of time, I wanted to, Shoshana, what is your take on the effects of giving this book to someone who is in mental health crisis? What's your take on all of that?
So, if a person is having an anxiety disorder, there are probably worse ways to handle it. Pretty much any other mental health concern, I couldn't think of a better way to help someone feel invalidated or minimized, or like what they are experiencing is not okay, and that they're just not working hard enough, and that if they just worked a little harder at reading the Bible, that they would be better, and that if they worked a little harder to forgive, that they would be better. It is so toxic and so scary. It makes me shiver to think about truly how many lives could potentially have been lost as a result of this book.
That's the whole IFB thing. And I've talked about this quite a bit. And I know I did in both the Mother's Day episode and the Day in the Life of College episode. This concept of if you're not succeeding, you're not trying hard enough, or if you're not getting the results you want, that's because you're not doing all the right things. And it goes back to the IFB's salvation theology. Because their salvation theology is, it's on you to accept Jesus, and that's when you go to heaven. Not God's grace takes you to heaven, but you have to do the action to access God's grace. So it's all tied into this whole thing of it is all on you, and if you're not doing it, it's your fault.
And that's not to say that recovering from mental health struggles isn't hard work. It is a lot of hard work. And you can't show up to therapy expecting the therapist to fix you. You have to fix yourself. but you need to know how to fix yourself. And this doesn't give you any direction with that.
It is really a mess. And I know that there are a lot of listeners who were probably given this kind of advice. And I just want to say congratulations for surviving this far. We're tough, and that's great, but toughness needs help sometimes. And just being tough, or just using your survival mode for an extended period of time, usually eventually quits working. And I would encourage people who had been given a book like this, or given this book, or given IFB mental health advice, to get professional help when you're able and when that's safe for you.
I agree that, you know, sticking in that survival mode, your body can only handle it for so long, and you'll burn out eventually.
And, you know, and I don't want to say, you know, great job for surviving. Like, that's great.
Yes.
But that survival mode isn't going to last forever. And you can use, like the trick that I learned to work through self-harm of writing Bible verses on my arm, that was like a very small skill that I learned. And that helped me learn even bigger skills in therapy that have allowed me to make immense progress in that area.
And you, Sadie, what's amazing about that particular skill is you essentially self-discovered cognitive behavioral therapy. You were just replacing your maladaptive thoughts with Bible verses.
Yep. This is one of several times that I've invented something that already existed.
Yeah.
Man, if we'd have taken you back 600 years in time, then you would have been like Galileo and Sadie and like Isaac Newton and Copernicus all hanging out as like the geniuses who were ahead of their time.
Well, I think we are going to have to wrap this up, but thank you so much, Shoshana, for being here with us on this episode. This has been as delightful as reading this horrible book could possibly be.
It's been my absolute pleasure.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah.
That was a great interview. That was great.
That was extremely enlightening into the mind of Jack Skop, which I don't know that I didn't know that I wanted to know that much about his brain, but it turns out that I did.
Well, he spent an entire book telling on himself. Just like this entire book is him telling on himself. Like, there's so much stuff that in this book that we didn't even get to. Like, just, I don't even know. Shoshana, thank you so much for coming on the show. We had so much fun having you. Dr. Shoshana Fagan, she is excellent. As you can tell, she really knows her stuff. She really knows what she's talking about. And she is absolutely the right person to, I guess, psychoanalyze a convicted pedophile and sex trafficker and cult leader.
You know, not everybody has the guts to go, yeah, I'll just read a terrible book that is against everything that I've studied my entire life for and psychoanalyze a cult leader. Not everybody has the guts to do that. I appreciate that.
If you really want to make a contribution, you know, sometimes what you have to do is you have to take something bad that exists and bring it out into the light. And that's, I think, what she's done a great job of. As always, if you are a fan of this show, you can follow us on social media on Facebook and Instagram. It is at Leaving Eden Podcast. On Twitter, it is at Leaving Eden Pod. You can join our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/EdenExodus. You can join our subreddit, which is reddit.com/r/EdenExodus. Sadie, do you want to plug your social media?
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter at HellYesSadie, on Instagram at Sadie Carpenter Music, or on TikTok at Sadie Carpenter 1.
And you can follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at GAVRIELHACOHEN. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We had a great time. Hope that you guys did too. Bye bye.
the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.